Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Total Energy Services Inc. third quarter results conference call. I would like to turn the meeting over to Mr. Daniel Halyk, President and Chief Executive Officer of Total Energy Services Inc. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon and welcome to Total Energy Services third quarter 2015 conference call. Present with me this afternoon is Yuliya Gorbosh, Total's Vice President of Finance and CFO. We will review with you Total's financial and operating highlights for the 3 months ended September 30th, 2015. We will then provide an outlook for our business and open up the phone lines for any questions. Yuliya, please proceed.
Thank you, Dan. During the course of this conference call, information may be provided containing forward-looking information concerning Total's projected operating results, anticipated capital expenditure trends, and projected drilling activity in the oil and gas industry. Actual events or results may differ materially from those reflected in Total's forward-looking statements due to a number of risks, uncertainties, and other factors affecting Total's business and the oil and gas service industry in general. These risks, uncertainties, and other factors are described under the heading Risk Factors and elsewhere in Total's most recently filed annual information form and other documents filed with Canadian provincial securities authorities that are available to the public at www.sedar.com. Our discussions during this conference call are qualified with reference to the notes to the financial highlights contained in the news release issued earlier today. Unless otherwise indicated, all financial information in this conference call is presented in Canadian dollars. Total's financial results for the 3 months ended September 30, 2015, reflect continued challenging North American energy services industry conditions. Consolidated revenues for the third quarter of 2015 were $66.7 million, a 38% decrease from the third quarter of 2014. Compression and Process Services Division contributed 69% of 2015 third quarter revenues, Rentals and Transportation Services 24%, and Contract Drilling Services 7%, as compared to relative contributions of 57, 28, and 15% in 2014. Revenue per spud to release operating day in our Contract Drilling Division during the third quarter was $15,801, a 19% decrease from $19,418 per day realized during 2014. Lower pricing was primary reason for this decrease. Divisional EBITDA was $1.2 million for the third quarter of 2015, compared to $4.4 million for 2014, with EBITDA margins remaining flat year over year due to cost management. Within Rental and Transportation Services Division, revenue per utilized piece of rental equipment for the third quarter of 2015 decreased 5% compared to the same period in 2014. The mix of rental equipment operating, as well as relatively larger heavy truck fleet, offset somewhat the impact of severe pricing pressure in this division. Divisional EBITDA for the third quarter of 2015 was $4.2 million, or 27% of revenue, compared to $11.9 million, or 40% of revenue in 2014. Unlike our Contract Drilling Division, this division has a relatively high fixed cost structure that pressures margin during the periods of lower activity, but also provides significant earnings leverage when activity levels improve. Third quarter revenue within our Compression and Process Services Division decreased 25% in the third quarter of 2015 compared to the prior year period. This division generated $7.4 million of third quarter EBITDA in 2015 compared to $9.7 million in 2014. EBITDA margins were relatively flat year over year in this division. Consolidated gross margin for the third quarter of 2015 was 25% of revenue, compared to 30% of the third quarter of 2014. This decline was due to our inability to fully offset pricing declines with cost savings, particularly within our Rentals and Transportation Services Division, without compromising the quality of our equipment and services. As well, our Compression and Process Services Division constituted 69% of consolidated third quarter revenues in 2015 compared to 57% in 2014. As this division historically has lower gross margins than contract drilling services and rentals and transportation services divisions, such increased contribution negatively impacted consolidated gross margins. Consolidated cash flow before changes in non-cash working capital items was negative $0.1 million for the third quarter of 2015 as compared to $24.2 million in 2014. The decrease in cash flow was due to low operating earnings and the payment of $10.2 million of income taxes during the third quarter of 2015 as compared to nominal income tax payments being made during the third quarter of 2014. The increase in tax payments was due primarily to the timing of taxation of companies' limited partnerships, which has resulted in $12.7 million of cash taxes being paid during the first 9 months of 2015 that relate to 2014 taxable income. Also included in income taxes paid during the third quarter of 2015 is $6.9 million that was remitted following the receipt of federal reassessment relating to Total's 2009 conversion from an income trust to a corporate structure. This $6.9 million remittance represents the entire amount that is required to be paid pending final adjudication of Total's appeal of all federal and provincial reassessments received in regards to this matter. Total Energy has received legal and tax advice confirming that its filing position is strong and therefore no provision has been made for these reassessments and the $6.9 million remittance has been recorded as income taxes receivable. Consolidated EBITDA for the third quarter of 2015 was $11.1 million, a 55% decrease from 2014. Low activity levels in all divisions combined with a 13 percentage point decline in year-over-year EBITDA margins in rental and transportation services division contributed to this decrease. Consolidated net income for the 3 months ended September 30, 2015 was $1.6 million after recording a $1.9 million unrealized loss on holdings of marketable securities compared to $11.8 million of net income generated in 2014. Total Energy financial condition remains very strong, with $92.6 million of positive working capital, including $9.4 million or 30 cents per share of cash, and no net debt as of September 30, 2015. Company's $65 million operating facility remains undrawn today and is secured by cash, inventory, and receivables. Our existing bank debt consists of $49.2 million term loan that is secured by approximately 65% of our own real estate portfolio. This debt bears interest at a fixed annual rate of 3.06% and requires monthly principal and interest payment of $278,800. At the end of five-year term in May of 2020, approximately $40.2 million of principal will be outstanding under this term loan, assuming only regular monthly payments are made. With the exception of real estate that secures our term loan, all of Total's capital assets are available to support future borrowings as it might be required.
Thank you, Yulia. Current industry conditions are as difficult as we have ever experienced. However, I'm pleased that we have remained profitable despite low equipment utilization and after incurring significant costs relating to downsizing operations and pursuing consolidation opportunities, including an unrealized loss of $1.9 million during the third quarter on our holdings of marketable securities. Unlike many in our industry, we do not carve out so-called one-time costs related to right-sizing our operations, as we view these costs to be part of the ordinary course of managing our business. As well, we take no pleasure in highlighting the difficult decisions that must be made during these difficult times, as such decisions involve real people with real families. That said, the costs associated with these difficult decisions will enhance Total's ability to successfully navigate the business cycle on a go-forward basis. Substantially lower activity levels coupled with excess industry capacity have resulted in a very challenging operating environment that is expected to continue for the foreseeable future. In such an environment, we will seek to work with our stakeholders, increase operating efficiencies, and reduce operating costs so as to make the various markets in which we participate competitive from a global perspective. We hope the Alberta government shares the same perspective as it conducts its oil and gas royalty review and looks to implement other policy initiatives that will impact the Canadian energy industry. We also seek to strike a strategic balance between equipment utilization and price, and we have and will continue to decline to pursue business opportunities that are not profitable. Simply put, we will not wear out our equipment for nothing. Over our 18-year corporate history, we have experienced several downturns, and we see such downturns as a normal part of the business cycle. As such, when making capital investment decisions, our analysis is predicated on the full business cycle, not the prevailing industry conditions at the time an investment decision is made. This approach to investing our owners' capital has served us well thus far. Our announced capital expenditure budget for 2015 is $19.4 million, of which $16.6 million had been expended to the end of September. As such, we have minimal capital expenditure commitments remaining. We strongly believe that the North American energy services industry must consolidate to provide the efficiencies and economies of scale necessary to compete in an increasingly global market. We believe this need for rationalization will become more apparent over the next few quarters. However, we will remain disciplined in the deployment of our owners' capital as we continue to look to use our financial capacity and flexibility to pursue opportunities that will provide acceptable risk-adjusted returns over the life of the investment. Simply put, we will not put our company at risk simply in order to do a deal. Finally, I wish to assure all of our stakeholders that our commitment to providing quality equipment and service remains uncompromised despite the many challenges and uncertainties faced by our industry. Total Energy's financial and operational strength not only allows us to decline to pursue work that is not profitable, but it also provides comfort to our customers, suppliers, and employees that we are able to stand behind our commitments and deliver on our promises. We look forward to continuing to work with all stakeholders to ensure the safe and efficient conduct of our collective operations. I would now like to open up the phone lines for any questions.
Thank you. Please press star 1 at this time if you have a question. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing star 1. You may cancel your question by pressing the pound sign. Please press star 1 at this time if you have a question. There will be a brief pause allowing you to register. Our first question is from Dana Benner of AltaCore Capital. Please go ahead.
Afternoon, all.
Hi, Dana.
I want to start with gas compression. The margins actually went up, despite the fact that your revenues were down. Pretty impressive, and would love to get any additional color on how you did that.
Well, I think our first of all, we're very pleased with all three of our divisions for solid cost management and becoming more efficient. As you know, I mentioned, Dana, there's tough decisions we're making, but those are translating into increased efficiencies. You know, obviously, you know, any employees that we have today are going to be the A-team, and with the A-team comes efficiencies on the production side. So a lot of the benefit we see is based on having a very streamlined, efficient workforce. And again, just going through our cost structures and working hard to be as efficient as we can.
Right.
You know, some U.S. dollar sales would also be in there, you know, translated in Canadian, but the primary reason would be cost management.
Right. Backlog having come down, how much can we read into that in terms of, you know, near-term weakness? Do you get the sense that maybe the troughing of that number may be close at hand? Or, again, any additional color would be helpful.
You know, we're hesitant to give forecasts, but what we will say, you know, first of all, orders can be lumpy. I think the third quarter we saw across all business divisions initial, I would say, optimism going into the quarter, and we saw, you know, some pessimism towards the end. Interestingly, within our compression and process group, we've received more orders in October than we did all of Q3. You know, whether that continues, we'll see. But, again, it, you know, there's a little lumpiness there. So today's backlog is higher than quarter end. So take that for what it's worth.
Right. Moving, there'll be lots of questions from lots of people, so I'll just pick off a few here. Your U.S. strategy, obviously, given what's happened in the business, given the regulatory environment and the political environment, you've made the U.S. more of a priority. And how are you thinking about that these days?
Well, I was visiting the U.S. last week.
Okay.
We're not going to sit around and hope that Alberta gets it right, for example. You know, we have I'll be blunt, we have a moratorium on buying Alberta-based businesses, and particularly ones that we can't move the equipment. And until we see some clarity, you know, which is ultimately going to dictate our customers' capital budgets, we're not interested in buying Alberta.
Right. I guess one of the, you know, one of the elephants in the room is M&A. Unlike others who have sat back, you did try to make an attempt in that fashion, and you know, and receded quickly from that. There are obviously lots of moving parts to these things, and you know, what's tolerable within capital markets and defense mechanisms, et cetera, may be evolving. We'll see, but this is probably a good opportunity for you to maybe update us all on your thoughts.
Well, first of all, we think consolidation and rationalization is critical, period. Secondly, we're disciplined, and everything's relative. And when we presented the proposal, well, tried to, we felt very strongly that was a very, very fair deal. And frankly, the markets have gotten worse, not better, since then. So that... you know, the lack of reception we got, we weren't going to get engaged in a protracted fight to fight for shareholders' rights of the third party. That's not my job. You know, I'm paid to invest our owner's capital, and if we didn't have a willing and engaged partner there, we weren't going to sit there and spend a bunch of time and money fighting for shareholder rights. You know, so that particular opportunity, they'll have to figure out what they want to do. You know, we remain a large shareholder. We're not particularly happy with that investment right now. I'm not going to comment on what we're going to do with it on a go-forward basis. But there's a lot of good opportunities out there and a lot of willing parties that want to sit down in good faith with reasonable expectations and talk about how to make our industry better. And that's what I'm focused on.
That's a very eloquent answer. One last question for me is on the issue of impairments. We're seeing them all across the space, almost irrespective of the subsector, and yet you drive on with you know, with an impairment-free set of financials. So it's probably, again, a good opportunity for you to help us all understand how you're able to do that.
Well, we're disciplined, and so we've. This quarter, obviously, auditors are interested in impairment issues. We've done a lot of the work that we typically would do at year-end now, and we're very comfortable with the carrying values of our asset base, and we do not expect to incur any capital asset impairments. And again, it's being disciplined. And you can argue they're non-cash, this and that. Someone pays for it. At some point, it also goes to reputational issues, and we're proud of the fact we've never written down any of our capital assets, acquisitions, goodwill, period. And again, it requires the intestinal fortitude not to jump on the bandwagon when times are booming. That's really when, in my view, auditors should have their antennas up. It's not now. There's no one doing too many stupid things right now. 18 months ago, that's when the auditors should be focused on asset valuations, not in the trough of the cycle. But, you know, our view is things are going to settle out here over the next few quarters. There's going to be a lot of good acquisition and consolidation opportunities. We're going to use the strength of our balance sheet and our ability to generate substantial cash at low utilizations, not wearing our stuff out, you know, running an efficient operation, use that operational financial strength to come out of this downturn stronger. And that's where we're focused, and we've got a laser-like focus on that right now, Dana.
All right. Well, it's good to see the fire in the belly has not diminished one iota. I'll turn it back.
As high as it's ever been.
Thank you. The following question is from Scott Treadwell of TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Afternoon, all. I wanted to talk about your point about not taking work that didn't meet your expectations. Obviously, the rentals and compression rentals would be the two areas. You know, without sort of putting numbers on it, how much of the sort of the drop in available or the drop in rented horsepower and the sort of, I guess, sort of modest increase in utilization was due to your selectivity, and how much of it was just sort of a market driver?
Well, on the compression rental fleet, Scott, and this is why I know some analysts don't include our gain on sale of PP&E. Most of that is compression rental dispositions. So year to date, you know, we've had significant proceeds on disposal property, plant, and equipment for the 9 months. It's about $31 million. The vast majority of that is dispositions. Those are the proceeds, dispositions on compression rental packages that have been sold on purchase options. That's a normal part of our business. So first of all, our overall compression rental fleet has shrunk because of buyouts. Secondly, what we've seen, and we commented during our second quarter call, is there's a big backup in natural gas in Northwest Alberta because of infrastructure constraints. And frankly, a lot of the rental returns were nomads. And ironically, as much as in the short term that hurts us, in the medium term, that benefits us because it demonstrates the extreme mobility of those packages. You know, some of those units have been out for years on a month-to-month basis, and they can be returned by the customer on a dime. Flip side is, as these bottlenecks sort themselves out, you can redeploy that horsepower on a dime. So we expect the nomad, you know, this business environment really has been, you know, on one hand, it's negative short-term, but it's really in our minds and, frankly, our customer minds showing the value proposition of the Nomad. The skidded stuff is just so expensive to move, you can't. And the other thing is, listen, it's a tough environment, but our high-level assessment on the compression side is a lot of it is simply there's no place for gas to go in northwest Alberta, and, frankly, you don't need compression if you're not moving it. That said, you know, where we see some good activities on the infrastructure build side in North America, and frankly, that'll probably help us out here on a go-forward basis and ultimately relieve some of the bottlenecks that the field is seeing. You know, on the your second question was on our rental and transportation group.
Yeah.
So, you know, the rig count troughed in Q2, came up a bit in Q3. Pricing in that business is as tough as I've ever seen. And so there's a lot of strategic factors that we consider when we price equipment and services. And, you know, profit is the underlying objective. We will be strategic in certain situations. I'm not going to get a lot of detail, but ultimately, the bottom line factor that you have to consider in the medium term is profitability. And I can tell you the pricing that's going on, both in the rentals and the rig side, will lead to train wrecks. The good thing about the rental and transportation side is those happen fairly quickly. And I expect, well, you're already seeing a few insolvencies, some public, most private. That's going to accelerate. And the difference this downturn is I think a lot of banks were hoping winter would save situations. It's not going to save them this year in our view. And so, you know, particularly trucks, they go down fast. And we're sitting here in large part watching some unsustainable situations, and ultimately we're going to be around when they fail. And that's bluntly my assessment of things. And we're not going to wear our equipment out for nothing. So
okay.
We don't apologize for below average industry utilization rates. We'd rather be busier. But at the end of the day, you can't subsidize someone else's capital program.
Yep, absolutely. Just the only other question I had was on the G&A side, and obviously I don't need you to break out one-time costs, but would it be fair to say that you would expect G&A as an absolute dollar to drop in Q4, you know, just assuming that revenue numbers are in the ballpark of where they were for Q3?
Yes.
Okay.
I think that's a fair assessment.
Perfect. That's all I've got. I'll turn it back. Thanks very much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you have a question, please press star 1. The following question is from John Morrison of CIBC World Markets. Please go ahead.
Afternoon, all.
Hi, John.
Dan, have you had any material contract cancellations or potential repricing of previous tenders that you had won within compression and process at this point?
We had one that we talked briefly about in Q2 that's ongoing, and
okay.
We're having some discussions, but nothing other than that.
Have you seen a material change in the cost net to you guys to fabricate and assemble a compression package today? I guess I'm thinking of steel, compressors, engines on a net Canadian dollar basis. Have you seen a reduction?
Well, the a lot of the components are U.S. dollar priced, you know, so... drivers, coolers, compressors. So that goes up. That said, that's pretty much a flow through. The flip side is on a labor and steel side, on a relative to U.S. side, we're definitely becoming more competitive and frankly seeing a little bit more international demand based on that. But obviously U.S. dollar components are higher. But again, we bid based on you know, what the prevailing exchange rate is at the time we've got to procure that equipment.
Just to follow on Scott's earlier question, do you expect rental horsepower to start to flatten off in terms of deployed utilized equipment in the coming period, excluding those contract buyouts from customers that you mentioned?
You know, for the same reason we don't give guidance generally, customer intentions are difficult at any time to predict. So, you know, whether there's more buyouts, whether you get a SWAC going out on rent. You know, what I will say generally is our experience within our compression rental business has been very positive. We're disciplined. We don't build compression rental equipment on spec. For a new build, there has to be a signed contract with minimum conditions, including term. And to the extent that those conditions are not met up front, I personally sign off on any unit that's built outside those parameters, and I'm not going to get into those. The point being is we tightly manage our investment because it is a significant capital investment there. You know, you can put a value ballpark of, say, 1,200 horsepower or $1,200 per horsepower. You know, we're carrying tens of millions of dollars of equipment in our compression rental fleet, so we don't take that lightly. But it's been a good investment over time for us. Like I said, a big chunk of our rental fleet is Nomads, which are ideally suited for rental applications, particularly short-term turnarounds. And so we're very comfortable with the investment risks that we've taken so far in our compression rental fleet.
Does pricing within the broader Canadian service rental market seem to have hit any sort of a trough in the past few months? I guess what I'm trying to reconcile is the fairly impressive margin resiliency within that platform relative to what you've described as the worst market conditions you've ever seen, and some of the messaging that we've heard from pricing discounts has been pervasive.
Well, scale matters, first of all, and that's one of the reasons we tried to initiate for a second time. Well, first time was kind of a mutual thing, we thought, but for a second time, a significant consolidation opportunity. Scale matters. If you're spreading your costs over a larger asset base, you can definitely achieve efficiencies. The flip side is we're also seeing market exits in terms of insolvencies. So there's select markets that we compete in both above and below the border where we're already seeing the competitive landscape tighten up, and that's going to continue. You know, whether we've hit bottom or not, I'm not going to give a forecast, but the longer this drags on, the more people will go broke, and the better off the remaining companies will be coming out of this. But it's not right now.
Have the discounts you've seen in trucking been astronomically different than the majority of service rentals?
There's some crazy stuff going on all over the place.
In terms of the way that you're treating R&M within contract drilling, is it astronomically different today than what it was a year ago? And I guess what I'm asking is, are you leaning on idle assets for inventory and critical spares at this point, or maintaining it in the exact same form that you were a year ago?
What we do is we, first of all, we don't capitalize expenses, so there's been no changes there. We tend to expense what others might capitalize. What we're also not going to do, though, is rope, soap, and dope. You're not going to have it sitting on rigs that have no prospect of going to work and buy new. So we are, that's more of an inventory, not a capital asset management. So definitely inventory management across all divisions, we're being very efficient. We're also, equipment that is not going to work for a while, we park it. We properly decommission in the sense that so it's preserved properly, and before it goes back to work, it's properly recommissioned. So we have not taken anything out of our fleet, but we've definitely preserved things. For example, you take insurance, you narrow it down for fire, earthquake, theft, but not operating until you need it. But, you know, that's one phone call. So you cost manage until you're ready to put that piece of equipment back to work. That's no different we'd ever do. The reality is we're not going to project 100% rig utilization in Q1, so why would you have 100% of your fleet, you know, paying full, I'd call it non-preserved costs if you don't expect it to go to work?
So it's fair to assume that you could put all of Chinook's rigs to work if you had demand other than working capital draws, inventory on a dime?
Absolutely. We would have no out of the ordinary capital costs associated with firing up any of our equipment, period.
Do you have a sense of what we should be thinking about for base maintenance spending in 2016 at this point?
We'll put our budget out in January. You know, you can take what we did this year, and I'd be surprised if we need a whole bunch more. That's the beauty of 18 and 22% utilization in rigs and rentals, respectively. You're not wearing it out.
Perfect. I appreciate the color. That's all I had.
Thanks.
Thank you. The following question is from John Bersnicki from Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon. Most of my questions have been answered. Just a quick accounting question. That $1.9 million unrealized loss, where would that have flowed through the P&L?
Finance cost. John, it's in finance cost.
Got it. Okay. That's it for me. Thanks a lot.
No problem.
Thank you. The next question is from Ian Gillies from First Energy. Please go ahead.
Afternoon. I was just curious if there's been any material change in the parts and service piece of the business in compression, and just whether that may make you either less or more optimistic on that backlog going forward.
Well, first of all, we don't report any parts and service orders in backlog. What I will say is we're very happy with how our compression group is rolling out their parts and service expansion. they're doing a good job. And again, you know, in this tougher market, you're seeing customers gravitate towards strong suppliers, so that's definitely benefiting us. But yeah, there's no parts and service or overhaul orders, which can be significant in our that's simply our backlog that we report in process and compression is simply a new sales number.
Yeah, I guess what I was referring to is whether there's been a material change in whether customers are using that parts and services piece and not maintaining their equipment, which could further improve backlog moving forward.
You know, I think I wouldn't say there's anything unusual there, Ian.
Okay. And the other piece I wanted to hit on was in the rentals business. I mean, the fleet size has been relatively unchanged over the last kind of 6 to 7 quarters. And have you guys done a scrub of the fleet and whether it may be worthwhile to actually retire some of the equipment in that fleet just because they may be redundant assets, et cetera?
We've already been doing that.
Okay.
So we add new stuff, we sell old stuff.
Happens to be the same number of pieces.
So
okay.
Below the surface, there's moving parts. But we like to sell when oil's 104. We tend to get good recoveries.
Yeah.
If you look at our gain loss on sale of capital PP&E over the years, you know, minimal. And like we've said to some of the analysts, you know, most of that will be compression rental equipment sales. And that's kind of the ordinary course of business. When we sell old rental equipment within our rental and transportation, that is outside the normal course. And if we ever had a material proceed from that, we would carve that out. But at the end of the day, and we do actually back it out. If you go to the segmented notes, you can see for the 3 months ended September 30th, 15, we had $69,000 gain on sale of PP&E within our rental transportation group. You know, the 10,000 pieces, you know, approximate, add new, sell the oldest. But when you see in this market we're getting a gain, tells you two things. Number one, our book value is solid because we're not selling our good stuff. And, you know, again, that's why when you see that, to answer the first question that Dana had on impairment, why we're not worried about our carrying values.
Okay, perfect. Thanks very much. That's good color. And I guess last question for me is, are you able to provide any sort of detail and maybe a rate of change of how much your equipment fleet has grown in the U.S. compared to 3Q14 last year, given your comments on the moratorium for Alberta businesses at this point?
You know, I'm hesitant to comment specifically for competitive reasons. What I can tell you is we are relocating equipment out of Alberta into the U.S. I'm not going to say how much, what type, and where. We're also actively looking at different opportunities south of the border. But it's tough down there, too. You know, so they're facing the same thing. But certainly, you know, the uncertainty in Alberta right now is unprecedented. You've got your macro environment plus a royalty review plus higher corporate taxes plus pending environmental legislation that we don't know what that means, which is equaling very uncertain for our customers, and we're not prepared to make investments until we see some color.
Okay. Thanks very much, guys. That's all for me.
You're welcome.
Thank you. The following question is from Michael Lee from Hypotenuse Capital. Please go ahead.
Hey, Dan and Yulia. Thanks for taking the question. You guys moved, or I guess your other assets did move from long-term to current. So would it be fair to characterize that as a reflection that you don't intend to hold those assets for longer than 1 year?
You know, I'm not going to comment on what our intentions are, Michael. I'll let you take whatever inference you want from that.
Fair enough. Thanks.
Thank you. The following question is from Mike Mazar from BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, guys. Just kind of quickly, the equipment you alluded to that's kind of parked and preserved, to use your term, how does one make the decision to you know, go through the cost and time and hiring and presumably training and all this kind of stuff to reactivate that, especially obviously you got to deal with the seasonality of it. Maybe things pick up a little bit in Q1. How do you kind of make that decision? Do you want kind of something long-term or at least semi-long-term with customers before you'd go through the hassle and expense of doing that? Or do you kind of say, okay, well, maybe somebody only needs it till middle of March and we'll take our chances after that? What's the philosophy?
You know, the reality, Mike, is we can move very quickly. So first of all, if you preserve it properly up front, which in it, you know, there's some cost to do that. We expense all of that. So we don't capitalize any of that. So we expense it. But if you do it properly up front, your recommissioning is not a big deal. And secondly, I guess one of the ironic benefits of the current environment is labor is not an issue. You know, at some point when we go from 185 rigs to 650, labor is going to be a huge issue. But, you know, if we go from 185 rigs to 350 rigs this winter, and, you know, your guess is better than mine what we're going to go, what we're foreseeing right now is it will not be difficult for us to commission any of our equipment. And again, you know, we put the proper dollars into decommissioning it properly. And at the end of the day, our rule is we're not going to commission equipment that's not ready to go. And that's one of the things about having a good, strong financial position is that equipment will be ready to go when we commit to do work. And so are we going to commit to do work that we can't make money at? No. But if we have customers, and I think the customer base is increasingly becoming sensitive to where the industry's at. In our view, simply, Mike, is we're in this together now. Listen, when things are a little more balanced, you have the give and take, the pendulum swinging. We're in an environment, frankly, where as an industry, we have to get as efficient as we can. But at the end of the day, if service companies and the oil companies are not, if they're as running as efficient as they can and we still can't make money in this environment, our view is park the equipment. Don't subsidize a drilling program if it doesn't make sense. So, and that's kind of where we're at. But at the end of the day, our customers are becoming more efficient. You know, we're certainly becoming more efficient, and ultimately costs are coming down, and it's, you know, our customers' decision whether they want to go. But we won't work unless we can see some profit there. But our costs to and time to get up and running are not going to be a barrier to securing work.
Okay. No, that's a terrific answer. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. We have no further questions registered. I'd like to bring back over to Mr. Halleck. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, operator. If there are no more questions, I want to thank everyone for participating in our Q3 conference call, and we look forward to speaking with you at our year-end call. Thanks, and have a great afternoon.
Thank you. The conference call has now ended. Please disconnect your line at this time, and we thank you for your participation.